Welcome to the Idea Talks, where we discuss big ideas. Idea Talks is a monthly conversation with Josh Tice and other leaders on big ideas for life, leadership, and ministry. For more information on this podcast and others, visit joshtice.com.
Are you getting fired up and fueled up? There are a lot of conferences for pastors that give inspiration and motivation to fire you up about doing ministry. But as I travel around the country and talk with pastors, I find many pastors are motivated to their calling. What they are wanting is practical ideas to fuel that calling. What if there was a conference that could get you fired up and fueled up? I want to invite you to Idea Day, a day designed by pastors for pastors with one purpose, ideas. Pastor Josh Tice and his team at Southern Hills Baptist Church have created an experience that feels more like a conversation than a conference. At Idea Day, you will be invited to learn ideas from other pastors while contributing ideas that have worked well for your church. You will get and give practical ideas about leadership, financing for your church, taking the next step in church growth, even ideas for facilitating small groups that are effective. Don't miss this incredible day that will fire you up and fuel your ministry tank.
Hey, welcome back to the Idea Talks. This is episode, what episode is this?
22.
22? That's not bad.
On a roll.
Look, some of you are just listening to this, and there's probably a few people you're like, this is my very first one. We've got to tell you, finish this one, go back to episode one, listen all the way through, and tell us which is your favorite. It's only going to take you like 15 hours.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, it's time well invested.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Idea Talks. This is a place where we talk about ideas that are big and helpful to you, your life, your ministry, your leadership, your family. And today's big idea that we're discussing is what, Drew?
Today's big idea is we're talking about believing and achieving the impossible.
Yeah, man, this is one I've been looking forward to. This is right up my wheelhouse. This is the type of thing I really like to discuss. Believing and achieving the impossible. And one of the things that's impossible is for us to have a Idea Talks without our fun time.
That was the best segue ever.
Yes!
That was so great.
That was a good segue, huh?
Yeah, and so last episode, we loved the Would You Rather so much.
Yep.
Guess what we decided to do?
Dun, dun, dun.
Round two.
Round two of Would You Rather. So play along with us, ladies and gentlemen.
Here we
go.
You
can play along.
So the question first is, would you rather have free Wi-Fi wherever you go or have free coffee where or whenever you want?
Yeah, that's tough. Because the first time I saw this one, I thought free Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's fantastic. Everywhere. Wait.
It's coffee we're talking about.
It is coffee. When we were in Israel, we had some coffee.
We had Turkish coffee. It was fantastic.
That was good. Where were we? We were up on a mountain. I forget where.
We.
Do you remember where I'm talking about? Like the bus stopped at that lunch and they gave us that little, but I don't remember where we were.
Mount Carmel.
Was it Mount Carmel?
It was Mount Carmel. Yep.
Oh, and it was not a caramel macchiato.
It was not. No, very far from that.
Yeah, it was a Turkish coffee, and man, I could go for one of those right now.
Yeah. So you're going to choose coffee, not Wi-Fi.
You know what? Here's my thought.
Okay.
If it's for the rest of my life, here's the thought. I think we're going to live to a day where there's going to be free
Wi-Fi
everywhere, right? So I'm going to say free coffee because I'm pretty sure we're not going to get free coffee the rest of our life.
All right.
What about you?
Just some context for people who don't know me very well.
Right.
On that same Israel trip, I care so much about my coffee and
yes.
I prefer my coffee in such a certain way. I like cold brew.
Yep.
So it's a process where you pour water over beans and let it sit for about 12 to 10 hours to let it marinate, and then you drink it cold because I don't prefer hot coffee. So I would definitely say the free coffee wherever I go. Like almost like if there was like a coffee genie and I could just be like, man, I want some coffee right now. And it just appeared out of nowhere. So I'm going to go coffee as well.
I want coffee too. I have no coffee right now and neither do you. What is our problem?
Yeah. I guess it's just late in the day and we're tired.
We are a little tired, so probably we need it. Okay, here's the next one. Would you rather have no one show up for your wedding or your funeral?
I only say this because I just had a friend that got married literally in the middle of the desert, and it was just him, his wife, and the officiator.
Wow.
So I'm going to say I would rather actually have nobody show up for my wedding
yeah.
So it's just my wife and I and the officiant. What do you call it? You're a pastor.
The officiant.
The officiant? Is that the technical?
The aficionado? That's not
Anyway.
The preacher!
Yeah, but like a funeral would be super sad if there was nobody there because it's the end of your life and you want people to, even though I'm not there to experience it.
Right. No, I'm with you. I would say nobody show up at my wedding. Honestly, I don't care. If you're not at my wedding, I don't care. They say, well, you won't care at your funeral. No, but really at my wedding, look, Heather and I, we met very young. We had not been with other people. We got married, and we just wanted to be with each other, for those of you who know what I'm talking about. And look, I don't care. Show up to my wedding, who cares? I want to get married to this woman and leave on our honeymoon. Yeah. That's all I care about.
This can be from two dudes, right?
Yeah, yeah, I don't care. Let's go. Yeah, so, but my funeral, I want to leave some kind of legacy. Hopefully somebody cares. Maybe my kids or grandkids.
Right.
Yeah.
Even though you won't be there to experience it.
Yeah. All right, last would you rather.
Would you rather rule the world or live in a world with absolutely no problems at all? And I love the assumption of this question because clearly if I was the ruler of the world, there would be many problems.
There would be, we would have massive issues.
Or would I rather live in a world with no problems at all?
Oh, I think this one's obvious.
Yeah.
I'm going with the latter one.
Okay.
What about you?
No problems at all.
No problems at all.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like it would be kind of cool to rule the world, but I it's like my job to solve problems. So I'm gonna go with living in a world with no problems at all. So.
Really, but then you'd be out of a job.
Then I'd be it'd be a perfect world, I guess. So I'd be good.
No, man, I would not want to be a ruler of the world with the problems that they would face. Holy cow! But a world with no problems? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's the millennium, right? There's eternity, Christ. And just because there's no problems doesn't mean there's not something to do.
Right.
Right? You can accomplish great things,
right,
even apart from problems anyway.
But I mean, think about it. I mean, we have so many first world problems, like
trouble
like opening the candy jar or...
Right. You know. So you have to define what problems are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's a good one. All right. Shall we get into the content?
Let's get into it. Let's hit it.
All right, man. Here we go. Okay. So tonight... We're talking about, I said tonight because it's night where we're filming right now. You may be listening to this and it's morning. Who knows? You're running down the highway with your iPod or
hopefully
something.
Achieving their goals. Yeah,
achieving your goals. We're going to talk about believe and achieve the impossible. All right, so here's the proposition for today's episode. We are limited by our unbelief more than by any other factor. Here's what we think. We think I can't do it. Here's why. I don't have enough time. So you're limited by time. Man, I could do that, but I don't have enough money. Our church could do this. Our business could do this. Our family could do this if we had more money. So we're limited by money. Oh, man, if I had talent, boy, if I had more talent, if I had the talent of that person or that person, boy, then we could do it. And so we're limited by talent. Oh, my education. I'm just not as educated. I wish I had that degree or if I knew more. We're limited by education. Stop it. Here's the reality. We're limited more by our unbelief than by any other factor.
It's so true. I think about a quote that says, you can either make excuses or you can make progress.
Mm.
And there's always going to be excuses in the way, like time, like money, like talent. But the reality of the situation is we are most limited by our unbelief and the circumstances in ourselves.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with having lots of education, a lot of talent, a lot of money, a lot of time. But the reality is those things do not make somebody successful. There are people with incredible amounts of education who do nothing with it. Lots of time on their hands, plenty of money, a lot of talent, and guess what? Zilch. Nothing. Nada. It all has to do with faith. It all has to do with believing and achieving the impossible. And so what we're talking about is that we are limited by our unbelief. What we want to do in these couple minutes is say, at least get across this concept. You need to kill your unbelief before your unbelief kills your dreams. So let's begin with the first concept. When it comes to believing in achieving the impossible, we would begin by saying this. Number one, belief shapes your reality.
Everything that you believe is your lens to the world, right?
Yeah.
So much contributes to that concept, whether it's your upbringing, your past experiences in life, books you've read, sermons you've heard, what have you, that your belief is your lens and your outlook onto the entire world. And then thus your reality gets shaped by that belief.
Yes, Drew. Every preacher knows this illustration of what we call the elephant and the rope. By the way, if you're listening and you don't know it, mark it down. You're going to want to use this in your next sermon. The elephant and the rope. What do we mean by that? We're told that when elephants used to be trained for Barnum and Bailey Circus and other type circus events, that or even in the Far East or in India today, the elephants were trained and are trained by, as a young child, they're placed a large chain around their back foot. Mm-hmm. And that elephant can't move. That chain staked into the ground holds that elephant in place. And every time that little elephant wants to move forward, he feels that chain on his leg and realizes, I can't move. This chain is holding me back. Well, as the elephant grows older, the chain actually becomes not as strong. The elephant becomes so powerful, he could rip the chain right out of the ground if he so chose. But because he feels the chain around his leg, he still believes that chain can hold him back. In fact, it's said that they that these elephant trainers will go as far as to get rid of the chain completely and put a rope, just a simple rope. Whereas the elephant, if he really wanted to at all with any strength, could snap that rope. But he feels, he believes, he senses that he can't move forward because he's still chained. And in reality, we do that to ourselves. Our belief shapes our reality because we believe we can't move forward, when in reality, at any moment, we could just snap that chain.
Yeah, I think about on the success side of things, so many people that I've heard and I've read about, and even myself, believe in this concept of visualization before going into a difficult task. You think about if you have to go into a difficult conversation with a boss, or you think about as you as a ministry leader, like this conversation you're gonna have with a couple potentially that's, you know, in trouble in their marriage.
Yeah.
By visualizing the conversation, potential roadblocks, things they might, you know, excuses they might bring up in the moment, and or potentially some hardships that might occur, by visualizing that before you get to the conversation, often you have a map kind of for how the conversation should go. And hopefully the conversation goes a lot better, as opposed to you just going to it saying like, I hope this is going to work. I hope it, you know, I'm going to rely on what other things I've done before.
Yeah, this is one of the things I love to do in marriage counseling. I love to talk with a couple and I begin to say, look, tell me about where you're at. And boy, they can tell you forever.
Stories for days.
Yeah. About where they're at. But then I want to bring the conversation to tell me where you believe this can go. And that's where I begin to paint a scenario that they've forgotten. You see, they got into that relationship having a visual of where this is going to end up. Boy, it's going to be beautiful. We'll have a wonderful family. It'll be a great thing. And over the years, time and sin and problems have created a problem in their relationship. And they have lost the vision for the future. This is what leads to divorce. And so what I do is I try to implant in their mind a hope, a vision, a picture of where their relationship could be and where it's going to be. And it really begins to shape the reality that they're not in the worst relationship ever. We have hope because we can see, as they say, a light at the end of the tunnel. Look, some people will never move forward because they just don't believe it's possible to move forward. Their belief or lack thereof is genuinely limiting them. Like you were talking about success versus failure, I believe that success and failure all begin with a single thought, and then, like you said, a visual image. For example, here's the failure aspect. When here's the thought, what if I were to flirt with that woman? Then, once you begin the thought, you begin to visualize it. Could I see myself with her? Well, now you are on the road, if you're a married man, now you're on the road to adultery. Here's the success aspect of it. What if our church had 500 people? Like, there's a thought. And that thought then can be visualized. Can I see myself leading a church of 500 people? Can I see myself with a staff of 10 or 20 people? And then visualizing that prior to. And what happens is that your belief begins to shape your reality. And some never will experience success because all they can do is believe that failure is always on the horizon. What are your thoughts?
Because they may have experienced failure so much in the past, they believe it's going to happen continually in the future. If they have experienced setback after setback or the unsurmountable, all they can see is the obstacles and not the way. I think that's all they're going to see in front of them.
You know, it's interesting you say that. Someone who sits back and all they've seen is one failure after another after another. How could this next big day, how could this next event succeed? Because, man, the last six, it was terrible. Boy, I went to a conference and I got some great ideas, or I went to an idea day and I got some great ideas last year or 2 years ago and I tried to implement them, it didn't work. How can I establish faith? How can I believe that it's going forward? And this is the practice we're talking about. And that really leads us to what I would say step number two in believing and achieving the impossible. Oh, wait a word. Second. Oh, my goodness.
We predicted that.
Get in here. We are in the midst of recording a podcast, and we have a friend that just came in. Note, you need to say hi. This is my friend Ezer from Shalom. Israel. Ezer, tell us about who you are and what you do.
I am here at Southern Hill Baptist Church, and I'm happy to be here. I came all the way from Jerusalem to meet my friends here, Pastor Josh, and the good people of Southern Hills. And I'm very excited to regroup with you after a good time in Jerusalem and to invite you to our next time in Jerusalem.
Now, we have members of our church who listen to this podcast, as well as a lot of other pastors around the country. Speak to them specifically about why they should visit Israel.
Well, I will tell you this first. Do you realize what our last podcast topic was about, what we titled it?
Oh, that's right. We entitled our last podcast, We Love Israel. Sure. And we did a whole podcast about our trip with it to Israel. But talk to the people. Why should they visit Israel?
Why should they visit Israel? Well, how can I say it? Instead of me describing it, you've been there. You've just, you know, experienced yourself. All I can say is that you read the Bible all your life. As a kid, you know, and it's over there, layer over layer, through childhood, through middle school, through your college. But then one day you actually decide to go over there and see the places you've been reading all your life about. And then, as I like to say, the Bible suddenly not only turns alive for you, but also moves from 2D on a page, 1D, maybe even 3D in an IMAX movie, to suddenly a full D, all D, oh my God, experience.
It is an incredible experience. And by the way, if you're a pastor and you need to take a church group to Israel, Ezer is your guy. You've got to contact him. You've got to take a church trip. And you can do it with as many as 20 or up to 40 or even more people from your church. Is that correct?
We do it with all our heart, and we do it for the people. And that's why if you have one person or if you have 250 people, we will take you and we'll make it alive. All you have to do is go to holylandalive.com or holylandtoday.com. And make this something of today, and not only literature of the past, but the living promise of God today in front of our eyes, and the exciting things we get to see today in Israel. And it's very exciting for me to see the vice president visiting, you know, Pence visiting a few days ago in the Holy Land. And he put it in his word in a press conference, not in a way, not a very politically correct way he said it, but he just looked at the cameras in a press conference and said this is the fourth time that him and his wife are leaving the Holy Land. He said that we never leave the Holy Land without a closer feeling of God and a closer feeling of the children of Israel. And we are very happy to witness this day in America that we see, how can I say, somebody who really lives out the verse, I will bless those that bless thee, and I will protect those that protect thee. And this is a godly connection, not from today, from many, many years ago, between the people who remember to come and bless and be ally with Israel and of God. Praise God.
So I'll tell you this, if you're a member of Southern Hills or if you live in Las Vegas, plan on going to Israel with us in November of 2019. Call the church offices. We can register you immediately. Save your spot. We're going to take about 45 to 55 people, and we want you to be part of it. If you are a pastor and you're thinking, man, I'd like to take a group, if you didn't catch all the information about Ezer, go back and rewind. If not, just contact me. I'm your friend. Contact me and say, get me Ezer's information, and he'll hook you up with a trip. In fact, Ezer, you were originally introduced to me by our friend, Brent Armstrong, pastor down in Arizona, and he's a great friend of mine. Great trip. You got to go to Israel. Thanks, Ezer, for stopping in.
Thank you so much, and see you in Jerusalem.
So the second point here, talking about believing and achieving the impossible, is the point of this, that the fact that the unbelief is killing your dreams. You know, our discussion today is based loosely off the book, Michael Hyatt's book, Your Best Year Ever.
Fantastic book. If you've not gotten it, you gotta Amazon that one.
Yeah. In this book, he references another book by Jeremy Dean called Making Habits and Breaking Habits. And Jeremy Dean talks about three dead giveaways if your own life is experiencing limiting beliefs. And the three dead giveaways are this: black and white thinking.
Yeah.
So that is when we assume we failed if we don't achieve absolute perfection. And man, this is a hard one for me. One of my new quotes that I've, you know, I try to create a lot of things, right? And I love to make things. And the hardest thing for me is to not fall into the trap of not releasing something or not making something until it's perfect.
Perfectionism, sure.
And the quote is this, done is always better than perfect.
Yeah.
Ooh. And if it's one of those two contrasting realities, if it's black and white, if it's absolute success or if it's failure, that's black and white thinking.
Yeah, you know, that's for a pastor, sometimes we can look and say, man, our goal was to have, you know, 300 people here on that Sunday, and we're averaging 200, and we only got 290. You think, man, we failed. Are you kidding me? What an incredible success. And to have a more broad, open mind when it comes to black and white thinking, when it comes to success or failure, huge point. Good point.
The next one here is personalizing. Man, this is a tough one. That's when we blame ourselves for random negative occurrences. Oh, it's raining today. It must have been because I didn't confess my sins last night.
Yeah.
Or, oh, I didn't get that promotion because, you know, I wore my hair a certain way. Like, it's personalizing every single bad thing that happens. It's all your fault and you're blaming yourself. That's a lie from the devil, and you're trying to really fall into the trap of unbelief.
Yeah, and this is one thing that's so easy for us to believe, right? Because we're trained with this idea of do this and bad things happen, do this and good things happen. We forget that we're under the new covenant, first of all. And secondly, not everything in life is a direct response to some mistake that we made in the past. To stop and realize, look, this type of unbelief is killing the dreams of my life. And here's another thought. The dreams that you have are not your dreams. They're dreams given to you by God.
Mm.
And so if you're allowing those dreams to be killed by your unbelief, what a terrible, terrible, terrible thing that we can be doing. What's that third kind?
The third one is catastrophizing. And that's when we assume the worst, even if there's little evidence. So it's when you're going to an assumption of an event that the absolute worst possible outcome is going to happen, even though nothing else shows that it's going to happen that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Michael Hyatt adds a kind of fourth treat here to this list, and it's universalizing. And he says that's when we take a bad experience and assume it's a true across the board. Man, is that so true? I've been in so many situations where I base my prior beliefs about the situation I'm dealing with, whether it's a problem at work, a situation where I'm trying to fix a problem between relationships, and I bring my own personal biases based on a similar circumstance that I think has happened before, bring into the first one and assume that just because it happened this way in the past, it's going to happen the exact same way in the future. And that's just not true.
It's not true. This is how unbelief kills our dreams. You know, when we think of great dreamers in American society, even this last century, I think of two guys, right? Steve Jobs and, for me, Walt Disney. You know, when it came to dreaming big and having faith and belief that those dreams are possible, these two guys excelled. Steve Jobs, after he passed away, his wife Lauren was quoted for saying this, "He shaped how I came to view the world." And there's a great quote. But so much more is found whenever you dig a little bit deeper. I've heard that quote before, but when you dig a little bit deeper into the context of that quote, listen to what she says. "It is hard enough to see what is already there, to remove the many impediments to a clear view of reality. But Steve's gift was even greater. He saw clearly what was not there, what could be there, what had to be there. His mind was never a captive. It was never a captive of reality. Quite the contrary. He imagined what reality lacked, and he set out to remedy it." Oh, man. See, if somebody were to tell Steve Jobs, it's impossible to put 1,000 songs in someone's pocket.
Mm.
What would have that done? And I'm sure many people tried to tell him that was impossible. But here's the thing. His unbelief was non-existent. He believed it was possible. He was going to make it happen. And now we don't have 1,000 songs in our pocket. How many songs can fit now?
I mean, millions.
Millions?
Yeah.
It's insane. If you go back 25 years, that concept is literally impossible. But somebody believed it was possible.
Right.
What is it in your life or ministry right now that you're being held back simply because your unbelief is strangling your dreams? Your dreams are being killed off because you're saying, that's not possible. Walt Disney is a perfect example of this. Walt Disney was one who was able to imagine what wasn't there and simply create it. So it's very famous time. He's sitting there in Southern California on a park bench watching his daughters play. And if you're a parent, you know what this is like. You love your children. It's fun watching them play for a little bit. And then you're kind of thinking to yourself, okay, when are we done? Yep. And this is what Walt Disney's doing. He's sitting on a bench watching his kids play. And he thinks to himself, he says, I wish there was a place that you could go where the parents and the children had fun at the same time. Hmm. See, in his world, in his pre-1955 world, there were places that parents went to have fun. There are places where kids went to have fun. And he thought to himself, I wonder if it's possible to create that. Hmm. And he went about imagining the impossible. And he believed it was possible. And in here's the thing. We believe this. Believe and achieve the impossible. How? Because belief shapes your reality. And number two, unbelief might just be killing your dreams.
The third point here is this, and it's a deep one. And you have to truly get past the first two in order to arrive at this third point.
Yes.
But the fact of the matter is you can change your beliefs. It's possible. It's beliefs are not a fixed thing. You can truly change your beliefs in whatever it might be.
Right. You're sitting there and you're thinking, well, you know, the leopard can't change his spots. And here I am.
Can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Teach an old dog new tricks. I can't believe it. I believe what I believe. That's foolishness. Of course you can change what you believe. You can change your own beliefs. Now, especially if you're a Christian, you better believe this. And if you're a pastor, an evangelist, you better believe this, because we see it happen every day when people get saved. People do this every day when they receive Christ as Savior. What do? They repent of their old beliefs and they establish new beliefs. They understand, they get to the point where they say, you know what? God loves me. There is a God. He sent his son to die for my sins. I am a sinner. I can't earn my salvation. Jesus died, was buried, rose from the grave. I repent of what I used to believe, and now I change what I believe, and I'm saved. The Christian, above anybody, should grasp this concept that you can change your beliefs. So what is it in your life that your unbeliefs are killing? What is it that you have a lack of faith when it comes to your progress and forward momentum and success? Then what I'm telling you is you can repent of that unbelief and change your belief, your unbelief, to belief.
Yeah, and there's five ways in which we can recognize the fact that we can change these beliefs. The first thing in the road to changing our beliefs comes with the fact that we have to recognize what our limiting belief is.
Right. Your belief is just an opinion about reality. You've got to recognize that. You say, what I believe right now, what I believe is true. No, what you believe right now is your opinion about reality.
And I can honestly, this is super fresh to me, because traveling to another part of the world, my opinion has changed based on the people I've met. Like, you're a world traveler, right?
Right.
And your opinion could be changed drastically once you encounter a different person or a different culture about something, and you get that new perspective on what you previously thought was dogma.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
Often changing the perspective or location geographically can help with that.
Studying history changes our beliefs. Traveling changes our perspective. Having dialogue changes. So what's the point? Recognize your limiting belief. You might be saying to yourself, I don't know if it's possible for me to accomplish this goal that I've established. I really want to accomplish this goal. I don't think it's possible. You need to begin by recognizing the limiting belief, or recognizing this unbelief that's hurting me. But the second thing is, not only recognize the limiting belief, record the limiting belief. Hmm. What I mean by that is, write it down.
Yep.
Get a piece of paper, write it out. If you need it to be on a tablet, sure. Drew.
Take a picture of it, yeah.
Take a
picture of
it.
Record yourself in a video, whatever it is.
Whatever you got to do, here it is. Record your limiting belief. What I mean by that is, here's a statement that you might be saying to yourself. I'm just not smart enough. All right, write it down. Write that phrase down, I'm not smart enough, and then look at it. And the moment you look at it, it loses its power. It's stupid. Who in the world was so smart, right, that they accomplished everything? Or here's another one you might write down. I'll never have enough money. Man, I'll never have enough money. What do you mean you'll never have enough money? That's a limiting belief. These are ones, by the way, the ones I've written here, these are ones that I've written down and looked at for myself. Here's one. I'm not athletic. Hmm. I believed this for years about myself. And the reason was is because every athletic endeavor was a specific sport I was not interested in. I remember I got to the point where I had gained 40 pounds more than was healthy for me in my mid-20s. I was 40 pounds overweight. And I remember thinking to myself, well, of course I am. I like to eat, and I'm not athletic. Mm-hmm. I like to eat. Well, the first truth, it will never change. I believe that to this day. But the idea of I'm not athletic was an excuse to be overweight and not work out until I began to find specific sports, that is CrossFit or weightlifting or jogging, things that I thought, you know what, I can, and changing that. Whenever I wrote it down, when you write it down and you visualize it, you're able to say, you know what, that's a stupid thing to believe. It is ridiculous. Here's another one. All preachers are heavy. I remember saying that to myself. All preachers are heavy. That's what's going to be. All preachers are heavy. That's who I'm going to be.
At least in America, right?
Yeah, at least in America, and let's forget about the other rest of the world. People won't put up with deep doctrine. This is one that I'm still struggling with. I write it down. You know what? If I preach this, that might go too deep. I don't. People won't put up with. That's a limiting belief. I need to teach deep doctrine on Sundays. I can't lead people who are more talented than I am. There's a limiting belief. Oh man, those are deep. Here's what a pastor does. Here comes a guy into the church, and he's extremely successful, well-dressed, and extremely gifted in some way or more talented, and he gets insecure. And so he begins to think, man, that guy would never come to my church, or shouldn't it? It's a limiting belief. No one will ever read my blog post. No one would ever read that book. No one would ever want to come to our church. All of these things are killing our dreams, and you need to change your beliefs by recognizing the limiting belief and recording it, writing it down.
Part of that goes into the next point of reviewing the belief, and this is a step where you have to honestly evaluate the phrase on paper or on a tablet for me.
So when we talk about review the belief, what do you mean?
So we have to review it in context to how your current circumstances are. Review it. What does it mean to you? Why do you believe that thing? Why are you telling yourself that? Where is it coming from? Who told you that? Was it sticking to you in the past?
Was this a label that somebody else put on you? Right. Was it something that you saw growing up? And so everything you experienced must be codified as inspired. There might be something that led you to this belief. So sitting down, writing it down, and then reviewing it, it might actually make that belief lose its power over your soul, because you begin to realize, wow, that's not true. It's just what I've thought or have always believed.
The next up here is rejecting the belief, and I'll back it up with a story. This goes back to the story of Martin Luther King. In 1975, during the bus boycott, he preached a very famous sermon to his congregation, and a phrase that he used in the sermon was this. He said, "Lord, help me to accept my tools, however dull they are, help me to accept them. And then, Lord, after I've accepted my tools, then help me to set out and do what I can with my tools." Yeah. So he has, and you can see him almost doing this, the steps that we're talking about right now in the prayer. He talks about recognizing what it is, recording it down, reviewing it. And then at the very end of it, regardless of what it is, he rejects the current unbelief and says, hey, help me to use the tools that I'm given.
It's incredible. And from a great leader to other great leaders, we can learn these concepts. So what do we do to change your beliefs? You can do this. Recognize the unbelief. Record the unbelief. Review the unbelief. Reject the unbelief. And then lastly, revise the unbelief. What does that mean? It means to rephrase it, to think of it differently. Let's take age, for example. Maybe you say, man, my age really holds me back. I'm a millennial and everybody hates millennials. Mm-hmm. Okay, how about we rephrase or revise that belief? Here's the idea. I'm not too young for this position. No. I've got more energy and enthusiasm than older candidates. Mm-hmm. You rephrase it. So you can't change the fact that you're a specific age, but you can change the way you view your age. Here's the other idea. On the other flip on the other side. I'm too old for this position. No. I've got far more experience than these younger candidates have. See, you can't change your age. You can't change your gifts. You can't change your amount of money or whatever it might be. But what you can do is change the way you view that belief. And you can believe then, choose to believe, that what you previously thought as a problem is actually a great benefit to you. And it'll change your life.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And I think it's all about the perspective of the situation. And it all goes back to, are we a victim of our circumstances, or do we truly have power and control over what we can do in the future?
Right.
Now, I want to really wrap up the podcast in this kind of concept, Josh. For those of the people who might be out there saying, like, isn't this just mind games? Isn't this just language we're using? Isn't it just like you're filled with empty platitudes and you're trying to be positive about everything? Like, what? Like, it's not that. It's truly... it's a belief spectrum that we have to change in our own lives. Like, it's not just a mind game. It's the battle is won and lost in the mind. I think about a quote from an author that I'm reading right now, Jeff Goins. He talks about clarity comes with action. And so much, the closer I move towards the goal, the clearer the action becomes that I need to get there, and the unbelief can fade away. And it's not just about mind games. It's truly what the heart of the matter is.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think if you, I really believe that's a limiting belief or an unbelief that is attempting to strangle your goals. Mm-hmm. So you're sitting there and say, well, that's nice. Power of positive thinking and all of this. I don't believe in any of it. And this is what I would say. Okay. Okay. So you don't believe in any of it. And that belief will be with you the rest of your life. I don't know what I can do to get through to somebody like you, but there are a few people listening to this and you're like, you know what? That might be true. You know what? It might be my own unbelief that's limiting my future. It might be my lack of faith that is allowing me to stay stagnant where I'm at. Okay, for you, there's a little bit of hope, and you're about to realize that what we need to do is believe the right things, say the right things, head in the right direction, and you'll begin to see that God blesses faith. And it has been amazing to me as I have put my faith not in myself, but in the God who created me, not in who I am, but in the God who made me the way that I am, not in what I can accomplish, but what God can accomplish through me. It's amazing as I put my faith in God that God multiplies the talents he gave me so that I can accomplish more for his kingdom, because it's not about me. Oh, what a dangerous thing it would be to be a steward that stands before God saying, boy, I just couldn't believe I could do anything with this one talent. So I just hid it in the ground. Oh, what a dangerous moment that would be. And so what we see is, yes, faith, belief in God and belief in that God can accomplish what he wants through whom he wants. Boy, that does change everything. And I do think the battle is in the mind.
I want to leave everybody with a verse just from Hebrews 12 and verse 2. It says, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. And it's Jesus who is truly the object of our faith, and that's how we can finish the race victoriously and get over these limiting beliefs.
Hey, now maybe you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking, man, I really enjoy this and I'd like to interact with Josh and Drew. First of all, we'd love for you to interact with us by coming to one of the Idea Days. Idea Day Midwest is coming up here on May 1st. We've got Idea Day South in September at Chattanooga. And then we've got an Idea Day West coming up in, I believe, January, February of 2019. Go to ideaday.net. You can interact with us at these Idea Days, but we'd also love to hear from you. We've not done this before, but we'd love for you to email us. Maybe you have some questions. We'd love to take time to answer those questions in a future podcast. You can email me directly at pastor@southernhillslv.com. pastor@southernhillslv.com. We'll read your questions over the next podcasts and try to answer some of those. And if you enjoy this podcast, Drew, what should they do?
They should definitely try to give it a chance to, A, share it on social media, Facebook, yep, Twitter, wherever you're at, and then rate us on the iTunes Store. By rating our podcast on the iTunes Store, it gives better visibility and access to the greater crowd. So hopefully this podcast can be shared with many other people.
Thanks for listening. We know that you've got only so much time, and you take time to listen to this podcast. We want to thank you for listening. Take time to share it, and we hope you have a great day.